Good morning, folks. We've got a full show for you today. At noon, we'll visit with Rafael Goianeci, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll talk about the federal indictment of former OPSO employee Kenneth Lawson. We'll get updates on Mayor Cantrell's arraignment and also Ann Brough's federal lawsuit. At 11:30, P. Ray Easley, the founder of Chicago Red. There's a big controversy over whether or not they should accept the assistance of the federal government, both with federal troops and federal law enforcement officers there. She's a congressional candidate. She says yes. Sherrard Crespo, Vice President of External Affairs, Director of Prevent Child Abuse Louisiana, and with the Louisiana Department of Health Offices of Behavioral Health, will join us. We'll talk about National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month in Louisiana 988 and what that means, and we'll talk about the numbers that we're experiencing here in Louisiana. Andrew Arthur, resident fellow in law and policy for the Center for Immigration Studies, joins us. Andrew just returned from Del Rio, Eagle Pass. He'll give us an immigration update as to what he is seeing at the border. And joining us now, she visits us every month, is the superintendent of the NOPD, Chief Ann Kirkpatrick. Chief, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, Sheriff? Thanks for having me.
Doing fine, Chief. Wanted to give you a few moments to kind of let this audience know about the state of the NOPD, what trends you're seeing out on the streets, what you're comfortable with and what you're uncomfortable with.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, our trend rates for crime going down and most every single category is still on track. So my morning stats, just a few, just to explain, our murders are down, continuing to be down 22% from last year. You know, armed robberies are down 31%, fatal shootings are down 40% and so forth. So we're seeing a continual trend, although the month of August, we were up in shootings versus the same month last year. So that's always troubling anytime I see any rise of violence.
Let's pivot real quick to funding. We've heard a lot from Councilman Joe Geruso on the budget committee relative to the overtime spend by the NOPD. What is the state of the state relative to your finances?
Yeah, so there is a deficit, and of course with the police department and fire departments will always be the largest departments on any city budget roll. We did spend a considerable amount of overtime, particularly after the events of January 1. My position in it is that I am a steward of the city's money, but at the same time, it is the cost of business to keep people safe, and I will not be penny-pinching when it comes to the needs to make sure I have enough officers out on the street, and if it's overtime, it's overtime, and I'll take my spanking if I go over any budget allotments, because your safety is number one, but that's the issue at hand.
Is that an approach that you think the council is going to be receptive to?
I think so, because no matter who you are, you want to be safe. And because we are low staffed, I still have to meet the needs of having officers present. And therefore, because I don't have the full complement of officers we need, I have to fill that assignment with overtime. And I think they do understand that. They haven't been harsh. It's just the issue of, hey, we have a budget and you're outside of the cost of that. But they understand. They're looking for a good stewardship. I think I'm a good steward, but I'm not going to be, as I said, I can't reiterate more. I'm going to do what I have to do to make sure I have the necessary assets out there for people to be safe.
It's kind of interesting to me, though, one of the things that they cut is street lighting in the neighborhoods and such. I know when I was sheriff, I was a big advocate of making sure that those lights were repaired, that they stayed repaired, that they stayed maintained. That's got to be a little troubling.
Well, environmental design matters. Lighting matters. Blight matters. It all contributes to the realities of safety as well as perceptions of safety. So environment matters, and I think we all need to be mindful of the impacts of lighting in particular.
Yeah, when you talk about blight, you know, I think there were, in the aftermath of Katrina, roughly 33, 34,000 homes that were blighted in the city of New Orleans. I'm hearing that number is in the low 20s. Is that something that you guys are tracking?
Yes, actually, thanks truly to a very good partnership with the district attorney's office. Jason Williams has an attorney assigned to blight, as so does the city have an attorney who's assigned to nuisance properties. I'm using the term blight, but these are nuisance properties. I believe I was reported yesterday by a captain in the 5th District that two houses have now been demolished that were havens for drug activity. And so that's what we mean by dealing with blight. So again, thanks to No Dice, which is a program that Jason Williams' office has engaged in and works with us in partnership on it, we can address blighted, those attract criminal behavior, and that's why we deal with the nuisance properties.
Have y'all been in a position in working with the DA and No Dice to determine a number of homes that you would like to see torn down? I understand what you're saying. It's a success, yeah, to two homes in the 5th District.
Right.
But considering 20,000 plus blighted homes, I got to imagine there's dozens, if not hundreds, that there's a desire to rid yourself of.
Yes. And even multi-level structures. And, you know, one comes to mind just anecdotally by Ann Kirkpatrick being over in the 4th District, which is Algiers. I think, wow, this property needs to be torn down. So what I'll say is that all of our district captains, they kind of really serve as a chief of police for that entire community. They will usually be the lead point person for the blighted homes or properties or businesses, frankly, that might be on the list for No Dice. London Lodge is an example of that. That was torn down because of a No Dice project.
As we obviously top of the news, let's pivot to this. Everybody's going to want to hear your reaction to it. Top of the news, the president makes an offer of assistance, whether that be federal law enforcement and or the federalization of National Guard troops. Would you be receptive to sitting down with the administration to see what it is that they in particular are offering?
You know, I want to point to when our governor gave us Troop NOLA. Similarly, people in the community were like, are you sure? Is this what we should be doing? My position in it as the chief of police is I am an independent. I don't care what side of your politics you're on. Everybody wants public safety. And so when NOLA came in, Troop NOLA, I was like, I'm going to embrace this. We're going to be partners. And we have proven that to be an excellent relationship. We work very well together. So whatever happens, this superintendent's going to work with anyone and everyone. I'm like everyone, too. I have my thinking about it. Our National Guard is actually the reserve to the military. They have a different mission. Their mission, if you will, is to fight an enemy. And we as police officers are not at war with our community. We have different missions. That's why technically, legally, we are defined as peace officers. But whatever the situation is, Ann Kirkpatrick is going to work with anyone and everyone as collaboratively as we can, and that's why you're seeing our crime strategies working. It's done in partnership with our federal partners, our state, our other local community, and that's why it's working, because I'm going to collaborate no matter what.
You know, it's interesting. You've been around to a number of different cities in that capacity. Chicago back in, I think, 2016 embraced federal assets coming in and working, and they had significant reductions in violent crime back then. We hear a lot of folks talking about this being performative, and I don't disagree with that, because I'm one that believes almost every bill that's introduced, almost every strategy that's introduced at the federal level, there's some aspect of it, they're political animals, there's some aspect of it that's performative. It's all about, you know, what's going to be in their best interest. I'm just, you know, kind of, I chuckle when I hear people say, oh, it's performative. Yeah, well, politics is performative. I mean, I mean, let us not get mired down in that. But, you know, if I'm managing overtime, if I'm managing this and I'm managing that, and if we are going to say that human capital matters and boots on the ground matter, it's hard for me. You know, I put myself in that position when I was sheriff. I don't know that I could look the gift horse in the mouth and say, you know, let's not explore this at all. No, I'm just going to reject it.
Yeah, I'm not of that mindset. But, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing. In my work history, I have been a Memphis police officer. I have been with Chicago. I have been with Oakland. I'm now here in New Orleans. So I have been actively a police officer in all of these very high crime cities. I will tell you, I think Oakland needs more help than New Orleans right now. I think Memphis needs a lot more help than New Orleans and Oakland. I think that we're going to talk about sending federal troops. There are some other places that I personally know. Chicago, I was in Chicago in the year 2017. I had this unique view, if you will. I will work with anyone, but I also know the pressures of these other cities that may benefit a little bit more.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing, though, and I think a lot of folks would say, well, you know, why Louisiana? Well, you have a Republican governor, and, you know, it all depends on the status of the activation of the guard. In my view, if when I was sheriff, if somebody was going to offer me human capital for free, it's not going to cost me anything, you know, depending on the status, because there are about four, maybe even five different statuses that you can activate the guard under, as to whether or not you're under state control, the federal's paying it, federal control, you have more limitations of posse comitatus and all of that. But when you have a Republican governor that's willing to do whatever to work it out, if somebody said to me, well, I'm going to send you 50 guys for free.
I have to agree in that respect. And if people, you know, what was it? 4 or 5 months ago, we had Super Bowl and then we had Mardi Gras. We had a lot of federal assets and we worked extremely well with all the assets who came. We are trying to be partners with everyone. And so I'm certainly not going to, I am a person who's going to collaborate no matter what.
You know, a lot of times I think people don't recognize nor realize historically how this has worked. I know at the JPSO, we had National Guard in our intelligence center forever. And in fact, they brought with them incredible expertise of new trends in technology that we just didn't have. And it was free. And it was like, I wanted more, not less.
We have analysts who are reservists, who literally are on my floor right here down the hallway, who support us in our crime analysis unit. So, you know, I just want everybody to work together to make us as safe as possible. So, again, you know, I'm going to make it work. And I do think there are other places I've just referenced that I think may benefit maybe a little bit more, considering our crime trends are on a 50-year pace. So I think we've been doing a great job.
You know, the thing is for the public, though, and I think the difficulty, and I'm sure you've experienced it, I experienced it, you know, what is the definition of that safe harbor, right? I mean, you're not going to eliminate all crimes. It's not ever going to happen. The vast majority of crimes are not violent or nonviolent crimes, and that's pretty much true. Well, I think it's true everywhere, right? Your property crimes and that far outnumber your violent crimes. So what is the number for the safe harbor? So, you know, when we look back in 2024 in New Orleans, I mean, the murder rate was about 40 per 100,000. I mean, that actually put the city at like number three or number four in the country on a per capita basis, right?
Correct.
So, you know, people are trying to figure out, okay, so what is the number where we feel safe? And it's a very difficult thing to articulate. I don't know that anybody really objectively can articulate that, but it's a demand that the public's looking for. And that's why I go back to this free resource. It's like, well, you know, how do you say one thing? You're looking for more people, you need more assets, you need more resources, but you're just going to willy-nilly out of hand decline and not even explore. And people are like, well, in fact, I got a call yesterday. So how safe can we be? I said, I don't know. How safe do you want to be?
I certainly understand that. But we also want to remember we are a city that's primarily a tourist city. We are a hospitality city. And so perceptions matter. And you got to think in terms of the perceptions that our visitors would have if they get off the cruise ship and the whole city is aligned with soldiers. Will that have an impact potentially on tourism? And that's why I think you have to think through, you got to be a critical thinker. You got to think about your unwanted impacts. Would it make a difference? Would it make people feel safer? I mean, that's what you kind of have to balance. And because I'm not in that political arena, I'm just here to say, let's think it through, like you talked about. Let's look at the critical impacts. But as a law enforcement officer, I have one mission. My mission is to keep everyone safe and keep the peace. I am a peacemaker. And so that's kind of where my I'm focused on what my mission is.
I've heard a lot of people say, well, this could be disruptive. It's kind of interesting. I mean, every time when the chips are down and you do call them in, no one talks about it being disruptive, right?
It's like, I know.
We seem to be able to work it out. Obviously, it takes pre-planning. You just don't want to go jumping in and, you know, whatever. Obviously, and if that's what the Trump administration desires, well, then, yeah, that's a legitimate reason to say, no, we're not doing it that way. We don't conduct our own business that way, right?
Right. I think, though, NOPD has been on a very good track for a couple of years now of showing that we are making some amazing reductions in our crime. And so I think what we're doing is working at driving us toward there. But gosh, the end game is New Orleans is fabulous. And I want every visitor and every resident to know they are safe. And we're not there. But obviously, we have too much violent crime. But our strategies are working because we can't argue with the numbers that are showing us that what we're doing is working. I would probably, as I said, look at some other cities where their strategies are not making a dent and leverage your help there. But I'm going to take whatever I can get.
Yeah, no, I just think we are letting the politics stand in the way of common sense about certain things. I mean, is it going to be the long-term solution? Absolutely not.
That's why when the president said he could clean it in 2 weeks,
that's a stupid statement. I mean, that's a stupid statement. Not going to impact anything in 2 weeks. Nothing in life.
But I don't want people to think that it would, and it would what would the difference be? Maybe we would lock more people up. And get the criminal. I like that. That's it, keeping it, you know, keep the evildoers off the streets. But then they're going to be released in 2 weeks, too. So, I just don't. I want a permanent change. I don't want a short-term change.
Yeah, I mean, and the federal assets that are non-military, I think, are 10 times yeah. more important than those that are military. We all work in task forces. You know, when I think back to yeah. when I was the chairman of the HITA, the High Intensity yeah. Drug Trafficking Area, for a couple of years, we actually funded, financed, and operated the entire narcotics department, narcotics section of the NOPD, mm-hmm. because they didn't have the
right.
money.
Right.
But we
exactly.
understood the critical nature of making sure that there were enforcement activities relative to drug enforcement that needed to go on, because it not only impacted New Orleans, it impacted the entire region. And,
yes.
you know, and just putting it in its proper perspective. Yeah. Chief, I just looked at the clock and wow, we just ate up every minute of the time that we have. Final thoughts real quick.
Hey, I thank you so much. We're continuing to press in. We're staying on track with all of our strategies. You see the differences. There will be more to come in a positive way. And as always, Sheriff, thank you for letting me speak with you and your audience.
Thank you, Chief. We know you're very busy. We appreciate it. Keep up the great work. We'll be right back, folks. That was Chief Ann Kirkpatrick, Superintendent of the NOPD. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. Stay with us. Folks, we thought it was time to check in on the border. You don't hear much about it because, for the most part, whatever was going on there ain't there no more. And Andrew Arthur, resident fellow and Law and Policy Center for Immigration Study, joins us as he just returned from Del Rio in Eagle Pass, which is along the border. He used to hunt in both places. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Nils, thanks so much for having me. It's good to be back.
So, Andrew, if you would, give us a state of the state of what you saw in Del Rio and Eagle Pass.
So, just to put those two places into context, Del Rio was the place where in September 2021 we had 18,000 migrants, primarily Haitians, pour across the Rio Grande in a four-day period and, you know, basically camp out and overwhelm Border Patrol agents. You may remember the pictures of people who were, you know, pitching their own huts, who were running back and forth across the river to bring food and water. And, of course, that was the site of the infamous whipping incident. And I put whipping in quotation marks. When a Border Patrol agent on horseback purportedly swung his reins at a migrant. That didn't actually happen, but that was the popular theme. When I went to that same spot just a couple of days ago on Tuesday, it was an empty field, and there was nobody on the other side of the river except for a handful of tourists in the city of Ciudad Acuña. So it is night and day. And then when I went down to Eagle Pass, if you remember, that's the place where the state of Texas put concertina wire along the border and got into a showdown with the Biden administration that was attempting to remove that wire so more migrants could come into the United States. I saw the same thing. Nothing was going on there. It was an empty field. People were milling about on the other side of the border, but they were simply taking advantage of the beautiful 92-degree day. They weren't planning on coming across either. So it truly, Newell, has been night and day. Tom Homan, Border Czar, and Rodney Scott, the CBP commissioner, and actually Joe Biden's first Border Patrol chief, have shut down the border and attained operational control down there for the first time in history. And I've been doing this for 33 years. I never remember it being this quiet.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. Are you seeing the utilization of technology? Are they beginning to deploy that down there along the border? And obviously, the border wall has been a bone of contention for a number of years. Have they restarted that effort?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's interesting, Noel, because the technology that we have lights and we have cameras that are owned by Border Patrol. But I also saw a lot of National Guard, not simply Texas National Guard, although there were a number of them around, but there were National Guard units for other states that have been assigned to Del Rio sector to man observation posts. They have cameras and, vehicles down there that they're able to keep watch on the border. And in a change, They've now put up an aerostat. That's a tethered blimp that flies high above the border. It can see about 200 miles in any direction, and it can watch for what's coming. So the One Big Beautiful Bill, which gave more than $40 billion to CBP, that's now being implemented. And when you talked about the wall and you talked about the contentious wall, the interesting thing that I saw was a lot of construction, but it wasn't federal government construction. It was state of Texas construction. They are erecting a wall that runs all the way from just outside of Del Rio all the way down to Eagle Pass. And we're talking about a 50-mile area to block off those points along the border that people exploited to come in. It's not that far to the highway. Once you're on the highway, it's easy for the smugglers to pick you up. Again, a wall is not a deterrent, but it is an impediment. It helps Border Patrol do their job a whole lot easier. And Texas is definitely shouldering a load when it comes to that.
So when we look at what is actually happening, let's move from the border to the interior, if you don't mind, for a moment. Have we been able to get our hands around the number of actual deportations that have taken place? It's interesting how the mainstream media handles this subject. There's a number of asterisks, a number of caveats, and they always take the approach to make the administration look like the numbers are less and that they're not doing as much as they claim to be, as opposed to what they did under the Biden administration.
Yeah, and you're showing your experience in the spin game that has been going on in this area for a number of years. The Biden administration boosted its, so-called deportation numbers by including a lot of people who were apprehended at the border. Remember, there were 2.2 million apprehensions at the border in FY 2022 alone. And some of those people got turned back, and the Biden administration added those to the numbers. Nobody's coming across the border right now, or a handful. 4,601 people were apprehended in July down there. So the Trump administration can't do that. What it's actually doing is going into the interior, what we call interior deportations, where ICE finds somebody, locates them, and removes them. So in the first 7 months, I guess it is, under the Trump administration, we've had 200,000 removals from the United States. And the vast majority of those have been those ICE interior removals of people who were living here illegally, mainly criminals. More than two-thirds or about two-thirds of them have either criminal arrests or criminal convictions and have sent them out of the United States. But let me contrast that, Noel, with 2024 under the Biden administration, when there were 47,732 interior removals. That's not a lot. And in fact, that's probably the lowest number outside the Biden administration that we've seen in, again, my 33 years of experience. So, we went from essentially no interior removals, no immigration enforcement within the interior of the United States at all, to a turbocharged thing where we're getting a lot of drunk drivers, domestic abusers, and more serious criminals, murderers, and child sex offenders off the street and out of the country.
One of the things that the media continues to do, and I want to try and clear this up, by saying that a good portion of the numbers of the folks that have been deported have no criminal record. But they fail to mention that they've already gone through the adjudicative process of immigration and that there's a removal order or a deportation order that's been placed on those individuals. And in large measure, are those not the other numbers that they're talking about that don't have criminal offenses?
Yeah, so when you talk about the people who, don't have arrests, don't have convictions, you're talking about people who have received due process, which, seems to be the talking point of the year, and who have been found to be removable. Remember, I was an immigration judge. I issued, more than 10,000 removal orders. And they're finally going out and they're executing those removal orders. That was one of the biggest problems under the Biden administration, was that the sole focus wasn't just on criminals, but on the most serious criminals, To the detriment of removing people who had come illegally, gotten final orders of removal, and been deported. And when you do that, Noel, you make it impossible to actually defend the border, because if you can get in, get here illegally, even if you get put in immigration court, even if you get a final order of removal, you're not actually going anywhere under that Biden regime. And so people, you know, felt free to come in. Who cares if I don't show up for court, because nobody's ever going to do anything? That's changed.
And with that changing, do you think that that's impacted the mindset? Because it seems as though folks are also questioning, and you've done an article on this about this, the curious debate over self-deportation. You entitled your article about it. People just don't believe that folks are doing that.
Yeah, and, you know, this goes to a mindset that exists on both the left and the right. Both sides believe that once any alien comes here illegally or otherwise, they're never going to leave. They'll be here forever. You know, you can go back to, you know, the famine Irish who came here in, you know, 1847 to 1852. And about a third of those people actually ended up returning to Ireland. This isn't a new phenomenon. But one of the things that we've seen under the Trump administration, the second Trump administration, is that the number of aliens illegally present in the United States has dropped by 1.6 million since January the 20th. And again, remember, I mentioned the 200,000 have been deported. We know where they, you know, how they left. It's those other 1.4 million people who have voluntarily left the country. You know, voluntary deportation is the big theme of Kristi Noem, DHS secretary. And a lot of people are getting that message. And interestingly, when you see many of these, you know, Democratic big city mayors and governors talking about how harsh ICE enforcement is, that actually helps the agency, because it encourages people to leave the United States on their own without being, you know, put in handcuffs, put in the back of a squad car, and physically removed from the United States. So, yeah, about 1.4 million. But again, you know, it's almost mind-boggling to think that that many people have left. And, you know, there are many people on both the left and the right who, you know, for their own agendas, refuse to accept the fact that's what's happened, but that's what's happened.
And then what's kind of interesting, obviously they're doing this in their own best self-interest, right? Because by doing that, it almost kind of washes away whatever their previous conduct was here and makes them eligible to come back to the country in a legal status, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, imagine that Newell and Art sneak into the United States. We live here for 5 years. You know, we make our money and, you know, we get on an American Airlines flight back to, you know, Cartagena. If we then go to the U.S. consulate in Bogota and we apply for a visa, it's not going to show we were ever here at all. So if you've been here illegally and you do have an opportunity to come back illegally, it's in your best interest to go, because, you know, the odds are you're never, you know, your previous illegal presence here is never going to be, you know, found out if you're willing to lie about the fact that you weren't here. And, you know, you have a shot at doing it right. And, you know, Secretary Noem has talked about exactly that phenomenon. If you leave, you know, we will make it possible, or we will make it more likely, that if you get a visa, you can come back legally. But if we have to deport you, you're not coming back.
Yeah. We know something's going on real quick as well, because remittances to some countries are down in a somewhat significant way, right? And
yeah,
for the benefit of the audience, if you'd briefly explain what that is.
Sure. Remittances are money that you make in the United States and you send back to your family back home. And that actually hurts our economy, because that's money that's flowing out of the U.S. economy. Mexico, on average, about $80 billion in remittances per year. Those are dropping. And we're also seeing the number of, you know, aliens who are in the workforce dropping, and consequently we're seeing the number of native born Americans who are here and getting jobs increasing. So when you see the unemployment figures, part of the problem is, or part of the issue is, that U.S. citizens are now getting back into the workforce because jobs are open, they're seeking jobs, and you know, that's raising wages, but it cuts into the amount of money that that aliens can send back home in remittances. If you don't have a job, you can't send money.
Yeah, absolutely. Andrew Arthur, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time and your insight. Love your writing and and if people want to see the article that you're writing about immigration, they go where?
CIS.org, Center for Immigration Studies, again, CIS.org, and I'm right at the top of the list because it's in alphabetical order, not in terms of competence, Noel.
I love it, right? The benefit of having two A's as a first name and a last name. Right? No one's going to trump you, so to speak, right? No pun intended. Thank you so much, sir. We'll be right back, folks. You know what else, folks? It's very interesting about the reporting on mainstream media relative to immigration is they're very critical of Tom Homan when he says that he's going to double down and triple down on sanctuary cities. And they say that he's picking on these sanctuary cities because they are Democrat-controlled or led cities. So if you're looking for violators, I ask you, do you go where they're are no violators, or do you go where there are a lot of violators? Does anybody really believe that there are like no violators in sanctuary cities? Isn't that where you would go first? Isn't that where the attraction is, where the carrot is to go for these folks to sanctuary cities where they're going to be protected as violators? If you're looking for a return on your investment, that's where I go first, right? Sanctuary cities. We'll be right back.